Good morning. I'm Commissioner Deanna Keller, Port of Tacoma Audit Committee Chair, calling to order the virtual Audit Committee meeting on Thursday, April 11th, 2024. Also present today virtually is Commissioner Dick Marzano, Audit Committee Vice Chair. The time is now 10:01 a.m. Our first agenda item is to approve the minutes from our last committee meeting on October 6, 2023. Are there any questions or comments? I move that we approve the minutes of October 6, 2023. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye. Aye. And then Commissioner Marzano, do you have an aye?
Yes, I thought you heard that. Sorry, aye.
Awesome. The motion carries. Thank you. So we have on agenda item 3A, the 2023 audit results, and I'm going to call on our port auditor, Don Kelly, for introductions of the Moss Adams team.
Thank you, Commissioner Keller. And if I may, I'll just take a minute. This is my first audit committee meeting since rejoining the port, so I'd just like to introduce myself. Again, Don Kelly, I'm Director of Accounting. I joined the port in 1999 and spent 21 years doing just about everything you can do here in the accounting area before moving on to Port of Seattle in 2020 in a senior leadership role in their accounting and financial reporting department. And then in late 2023, Darren Arakaki, my predecessor, decided to retire, kind of a surprise to all of us. But then that allowed the stars to sort of align for me to come back and pick up the baton from him. So while I'm not new to the port, I'm new in this role, so I'm very excited to work with y'all going forward and in serving in whatever capacity you guys need from me. So with that, again, this is introducing the 2023 audit results. Moss Adams, our audit partner, completed the 2023 financial statement audit about a week ago, and Olga Darlington is here from Moss to present the results. So, Olga.
Thank you, Don. Good morning, everyone. All right, we'll start with on the next slide, just a brief agenda of items that I will cover. Of course, the audit reports that we issued as a result of our audit, a few highlights of the areas of the audit where we spent most of our effort, some required communications. These are required by accounting standard for us to be communicated to you certain information as a result of our audit, and then I'll cover some additional items at the end. The next slide highlights the reports that we have issued as a result of the audit. The first one is a report on the financial statements of the port, which includes the enterprise fund, which is the port's operations itself, as well as the post-employment healthcare benefit trust fund, which is a fiduciary fund. So that's an umbrella opinion unmodified report on the financial statements. Meaning that they're presented fairly in accordance with U.S. generally accepted accounting principles. The audit we perform is under government auditing standards. Therefore, they require us to issue an additional report on internal control over financial reporting, in which case we review and test certain internal controls and processes as part of financial reporting. And if we identify any findings, generally those would be included in the report. And I'm pleased to say that there are no findings included in the report on internal controls over financial reporting. There's one additional engagement that we perform kind of in concurrence with the audit, and that's the we issue a report on agreed upon procedures for the Washington State Department of Ecology and Environmental Protection Agency with respect to certain amounts that port holds for future environmental liabilities. The portion that we perform procedures on just really relate on the certification of financial statement amounts, total assets, total liabilities, and such. And that's why it's kind of a good time to perform it at the same time as we're completing the audit. So that report was issued as well and will be submitted with the CFO certification letters to those agencies. Next slide. Right. I always like to highlight what do we do during our audit. The audit spends a lengthy time. We perform some procedures as interim before the end of the year. In this case, back in October, we performed procedures over internal control environment, which included project controls over CIP projects, cash receipts, cash disbursements, payroll, treasury cycle, as well as just overall financial reporting controls and controls over general computers and IT systems. We came back at final field work in starting in February to perform the remainder of the audit. Some of the areas that we focus on are management estimates. I have mentioned that before. Those are amounts recorded in financial statements that are based on a management's knowledge of historic events, trends, and other things that are not necessarily we can't confirm with third parties. So we have to test those assumptions and make sure that they're reasonable in light of those specific estimates. So those for the port are primarily allowance for doubtful accounts, legal contingencies, insurance recoveries, pension and post-employment benefit plans. The big one here is the environmental remediation liability that we spend quite a bit of time reviewing the assumptions for various environmental sites and the costs that are accrued for future remediation. Capital assets is one of the largest balances on the balance sheet, over $800 million recorded as of December 2023. So this is where we spend a lot of time, as I mentioned, on projects that are in the construction in progress, where over $12 million in additions were recorded in 2023. We also look at any retirements that happened during a year, test some cost additions, depreciation, and so forth. So takes a big effort to complete that testing. There's one new GASB that was implemented in 2023. It's a GASB Statement 96, subscription-based information technology arrangements, very similar to the leasing standard that we talked about last year, where any commitments that the port has for IT arrangements, particularly those that are subscription-based or software as a service or cloud service, would be recorded as an asset and a liability on the balance sheet for the term of the contract. The port implemented the standard and did restate 2022 financial statements to reflect the comparative presentation for this implementation. However, the financial impact wasn't really significant. The total asset and liability were under $1 million recorded, and that's included in the capital assets on the balance sheet. And then a footnote on capital assets, you will see that as a separate line item. Northwest Seaport Alliance, there's a big investment in the joint venture, over $300 million recorded in 2023. That investment increased in 2023 as a result of just distributions, contributions offset with distributions and just revenues from the Northwest Seaport Alliance. So we do that in conjunction with auditing the Northwest Seaport Alliance financial statements. Next slide. Couple more areas. Bond activity, there were no new bond issuances in 2023, so we really just saw a decrease in outstanding debt for the port. So we just confirmed those amounts outstanding, make sure that the port is in compliance with any bond covenants. Revenue is a significant risk for all of our audits. We did see increase in revenues in 2023 in all aspects, actually all areas, operating revenues, revenues from joint venture, income from investments was a good increase, a little bit of an increase in taxes as well, in tax levy as well. So all in all, that contributed to overall positive change in that position or net income in 2023 for the port and over $80 million. Fiduciary activities are related those to, as I mentioned, to the benefit trust, the post-employment healthcare benefits. Those statements just reflect the investments that the trust has and some activity for distribution of benefits to the retirees. So we do perform testing over that. Those balances also saw increase in 2023 in overall total investments balance as a result of the positive investment income. All right, next slide. So some required communications, as I mentioned earlier, we audit the financial statements and retain our independence. As a result of our audit, management owns the financial report and all of the transactions and all of the systems and controls that result in reporting the financial information. So we performed our audit in accordance with plan scope. There were no surprises. The plan we set out for the audit, as I mentioned, happens early prior to the end of the year. So we started this planning back in September. Good communication and collaboration with the port team, where we did not have any surprises or didn't have to change our audit approach in any way. Significant accounting policies included in note one to the financial statements. Not a lot of changes to that footnote, kind of setting the framework for reporting of the balances during the year. Just a couple of new additions related to that new GASB that I mentioned on subscription-based information technology, accounting for those agreements. I'm pleased to report we did not have any disagreements with management or any difficulties encountered during the audit. The team at the port was very, very helpful, very responsive to all of our questions, very timely in providing information. So overall, that definitely contributed to the timely report issuance this year again. Next slide. Okay. One of the areas that we always have to report to you is whether there were any corrected audit adjustments as a result of the procedures that we perform, or any uncorrected audit adjustments that management decided to pass on and not reflect in the financial statements. I'm pleased to report there are none of those of either kind. So the information that we were presented for the audit was accurate, and so we did not identify any areas that required an adjustment to the information that we received. We don't design our procedures to find fraud, but we do include consideration of it as in the financial statement audits and perform different procedures. We try to change them up every year to make sure that we don't find any indication of fraud or non-compliance with laws and regulations. So some of those procedures include testing journal entries that are manually recorded by the personnel at the port, third-party confirmations, and interviews with personnel throughout the port. And we do talk to many, many people at the port throughout our audits. So that's one of the questions that we often ask. Next slide. Okay, new and upcoming accounting pronouncements. I just wanted to put them up there for kind of your awareness for next year. Happy to say that these upcoming pronouncements are not going to be as complicated as the ones that we implemented in 23 and 22, those leases and SPIDA pronouncements. So these should be much, much less of an undertaking and an effort for at least a couple of years for us in a financial statement. So we'll talk about them as they're implemented in the next couple of years. And the next slide is big thank you to the team at the port. As I mentioned, we talked to many individuals throughout the organization, not just to the finance and accounting folks. Don Kelly, thank you for your leadership in the audit. The first audit in your position went very well. And as I said, Don and his team were very, very responsive to all of the requests and questions and just very collaborative with us throughout the audit. So all in all, very clean, very smooth audit and good results for your review. And that concludes my presentation.
Olga, thank you so very much. Commissioner Marzano, do you have any questions for Olga?
Yeah, just very quickly, Olga, I want to thank you also very much for what you just stated. And I like the fact, starting off the day, where we have no surprises and on and always. That's always nice to hear. And Don, thank you and your staff for working so collaboratively with the audit committee and doing things that moving forward like this. It's always a good first step. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Great. Thank you. I'd like to echo what Commissioner Marzano also talked about. I want to thank our team. It's always nice to have folks come in and mix. I know our Moss Adams team makes it easier for you to be able to look through the books, and we're very proud about the way that we handle taxpayer monies at the Port of Tacoma. I have a couple of questions for you and just mostly curiosity questions. So when you talk about levy dollar applications, and you know that the commission has a resolution on how those monies are to be expended, do you follow through with that and make sure that that those resolutions are being held to be true when you do your assessment?
We primarily focus on revenue in the scope of our audits. So as the revenue is received, we're making sure that it's correctly received. We do, not in this year's audit, but in the audits past, included some procedures. As I mentioned, we change them up every year for spend of the tax dollars, but not in this year's audit.
Great. I think maybe possibly moving forward, it would be good for the public to be able to know that that's an auditing procedure that, you know, our policies are being followed as well. So just a thought with that, maybe Don, a thought for you as well. In terms of capital assets, as you know, with Northwest Seaport Alliance, that we're in this 20-year marriage of the Northwest Seaport Alliance with the Port of Seattle, and looking at 2035 is a possible assessment of, you know, what to do and how to, if we decide to walk separate ways, then we obviously have to take a look at assets and things like that. What kind of asset mapping are you doing when the Northwest Seaport Alliance is putting together capital expenditures on Port of Tacoma properties? And so I'm just wanting to know how those things are verified and keeping track of the CapEx expenditures to Port of Tacoma properties.
Yes. So when we receive the information for additions to capital assets for Northwest Seaport Alliance, we receive those separated by each home port. So there's a separate presentation for assets contributed or completed at the Port of Seattle and separate from Port of Tacoma. So both of those categories, if you will, are kept separately for all of the activity in the construction projects and any asset additions. So they are definitely kept track of in a good shape.
So that, I just want to make sure that that's an every year thing that we do, and I'm sure that it is because of how important it is. Any other questions, Commissioner Marzano?
Nope, I have none. I'm fine.
Okay. So thank you very much, Olga. We really appreciate working with Moss Adams always and appreciate the work that you're doing with us. And thanks for everything. I'd like to move on to item 3B, which is the L&I audit report. And I'd like to call on Sarah Kern.
Yes, good morning, commissioners. I'm the risk manager, Sarah Kern. I replaced Lou Polson in the summer of 22. L&I oversees workers' compensation in the state, and they conduct periodic audits for the self-insured entities to ensure that we're complying with the rules. Unfortunately, we did not pass our most recent audit, although there are some extenuating circumstances that I outlined in the memo, given the unique relationship with the PMA, the Pacific Maritime Association, as well as the NWSA, which operates as a sub-account under the Port of Tacoma. I'm happy to either walk you through it or answer any questions, whatever you prefer.
You know, Sarah, if you could walk us through that, is that okay with you, Commissioner Marzano?
Yes, fine.
Okay. That'd be
good. So feel free to either interject or tell me I'm giving too much background. But historically, when the L&I conducted audits, they started with kind of what they would consider a simple audit to ensure that time loss payments were made in a timely manner and that time loss payments were getting to the correct people. If you pass the initial audit, they did not move to step two, which is what they call the tiered wage audit. However, most people were passing the first audit, so they decided that they'd spice it up a little bit and you could get any sort of audit. So in this situation, we found out last fall that they were going to audit to ensure that our time loss payments to our workers were correct. However, the five workers that they selected as part of the audit were all NWSA workers, but they weren't actually employed by the NWSA. They were longshore labor that was dispatched by the Pacific Maritime Association working for the NWSA at the time that they were injured. Unfortunately, I can't speak to exactly how we set up the NWSA as a subaccount to the Port of Tacoma. I can assume it was the best decision at the time and it made sense, but it makes things challenging in that when we are dealing with the dispatched workers of the PMA, we do not have access to the same records that we do for a Port of Tacoma worker or an NWSA worker. So what Labor and Industries asked for as part of this audit is they wanted a year's worth of essentially time cards to show what these workers were making, pay stubs to show their wages, and then also information regarding their healthcare benefets.
Sarah,
I went to the PMA, as did, sorry.
No, I didn't have a question for that. I'm assuming then if the L&I audit happens with the NWSA, the same thing would be, they'd be asking the same questions for the Port of Seattle.
So this is based on my knowledge of the Port of Seattle, but they don't use longshore labor. Port of Seattle directly does not employ.
Okay. Longshore labor. You're right. Yeah. They don't have a working. Yeah. Got it. Thank you.
So their audits are a lot easier. Let's put it that way. So initially I went to our payroll department being relatively new. They're like, we don't have records of these, you know, employees because they're not employed by us. They are paid by the PMA directly. I spent a lot of time working with the attorney for the Pacific Maritime Association out of San Francisco, as well as our TPA was trying to get it through administrative channels. But the PMA is very, very protective of their records. And so, unfortunately, short of some pretty massive legal work and subpoenas, we kind of had to make do with what the PMA was willing to supply us, which was good, but it wasn't fully encompassing. And so, as far as the wage calculation goes, there were two problems. One was we never could get the true value of the benefits, and benefits usually don't come into play in a work comp injury unless they lose their employer supplied benefits. And then that wage or that value that is no longer being part of the benefit, they get compensation for that. And so PMA kept directing us to their public website, which gives an average of what all the employees, the value of the benefits averaged amongst various situations. And so short of having the real number from the PMA, when we were including non-wage health fringe benefits, we had to just use an average that we essentially got online, which is not accurate for each individual employee. That was one problem that we had. The other issue that we had was the way that we were calculating time loss. And there's multiple groups of employees that L&I considers. One, for a lot of us, me, I work, you know, full time, I'm a salaried employee. It's really easy. You just look at what my hourly wage is. That's what my rate is. Longshore workers are different in that they have varying hours per week, and then they also have varying rates per hours. And so what our TPA, third party administrator that administers claims on our behalf, had been using was essentially workers that have varying hourly work and varying wages. And it's a slightly more complicated methodology for calculating that number. They look at the last 12 months, they look at what they earned wage-wise, they average it by month, and then they average it over the year. So it's pretty comprehensive and takes into account all the variability of being a longshore worker. Ellen, I disagreed with that methodology and said, no, they're seasonal workers that only work when work is available, and that it's a straight average. You take what they earned over 12 months, you divide it by the number of hours they worked, and you come up with a straight number. We disagreed with that because one of the kind of criteria for that is our longshore worker, we argued, wants to work full time in most situations. A seasonal worker often doesn't have the opportunity to work full time. And an example, I was a work comp adjuster 20 years ago. They use like an apple picker. Apple pickers can't pick 12 months a year because the apples aren't available to pick. And so that would be the example of a seasonal worker. We had meetings, the TPA, myself, with the top of the labor and industries kind of adjudication department, and they disagreed and they said we could sue them if we disagreed with their application of the methodology for coming up with the time loss. So with this, we acquiesced and agreed to use their methodology, which is simpler. Again, we don't necessarily think it's the most accurate, but unless we're going to take this on, it's a whole different ballgame. It's also noted that this is such a small subset of employees. This isn't employees working for the Port of Tacoma. This isn't employees even employed by the NWSA. It's the subset of PMA dispatched employees working for the NWSA at the time that they were injured. So those were the two major discrepancies. It was the value of the healthcare benefits, which we couldn't obtain. It was the calculation methodology. Elle and I found three employees that they demanded essentially that we go back and recalculate. And it is essentially a net wash. One woman we owed about $38 to. It was a very just kind of small, almost a rounding error. There were two rather large ones. One gentleman we owed a little over $15,000 to, and one gentleman owed us $15,000. We did not request a straight reimbursement. I can, again, discuss how we're looking into that. We did pay the two underpayments right away. And the gentleman that owes money, we've come up with what we think is a calculated approach. He has also appealed to L&I, stating that he doesn't think it was applied correctly. So that's in a stay right now anyways, until L&I comes back and finalizes that they, what we did, what they told us to do, and are they standing by what they told us to do?
Great. Sarah, thank you so much for explaining all that. Dick, do you have some questions?
No, but I can understand the complexity of this thing because of, you know, they're picking workers that may work 2 days one week and seven the next. And every job they have changes their wages. You know, you're not making the same because there's skill benefits, there's other different things, different categories. So it's real difficult.
It's a very unique situation. And I tried to find another entity that had it, and I was told there are none in the state of Washington. So whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's what Ellen and I told me.
Thank you. I know that would have been difficult.
Thank you, Sarah. I think that it might be helpful, and I'm channeling Don Kelly and also Helen Hickman as well on this one, but I think it would be beneficial at our next public meeting, a commission meeting, that Sarah, you kind of describe what the situation was. I think you're the best person qualified to describe that. Don't you agree, Commissioner Marzano?
Yeah, that'd be great. I think it,
happy to do so.
That would be great. Thank you for all your work with all of this too. Really appreciate it.
Any other questions on that?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So we're now to 3C Audit Committee Look Ahead, and I'm going to call on our Port Auditor, Don Kelly. And again, welcome for your first meeting.
Thank you. Good to be here. Good to be back. This will be very brief. I just wanted to make you aware of the schedule for the state audit. As you are both well aware, we have an annual accountability audit that takes place usually second half of the year, 6 or so months after the financial audit, typically. A year ago, when the SAO would have done the 2021 accountability audit, I was determined that that would be deferred, and 21 and 22 would both take place early this year. For a variety of reasons, primarily resource constraints, that's been deferred again. So the SAO will come in the fourth quarter. So probably our next meeting, there will be an entrance conference for SAO, but they're going to come in and do a 3-year exam. They'll look at 2021, 2022, and 2023 all at once. Very unusual, not something they typically do. I don't know that it, you know, adds additional risk for the port. You know, we have pretty tight controls and great processes and good diligent people, but it will just be a bigger body of work and it will take a little longer. So I want to make you aware, in case you're wondering about the accountability audit. You haven't heard about one of those for a while, probably. So it's not off the table, it's just been deferred. So that'll happen fourth quarter. Other than that, I don't have anything really to make you aware, but I do want to take a minute while I have sort of the floor and just you know, echo the acknowledgements that Olga gave, and really say thank you to Brian Lee specifically and Ashley Novinger, the accounting managers that work with me, and really every member of the accounting team does great work every day to make sure that the port upholds its great standards of financial accounting under GAAP and good internal control and great compliance. So, you know, we couldn't be successful without the work of every single team member. And I want to make sure everyone gets acknowledgement there. Other than that, I have nothing more. I'm available for any questions you may have of me.
Great. Commissioner Marzano, do you have some questions?
No questions. Just thank you, Don. One of the things I think I can speak for Commissioner Keller is we like having a report like this with no surprises. Repeat, no surprises.
Agreed.
Yes, I would agree with that. Commissioners, certainly none of us like any surprises, especially when it comes to financial auditing. And this team does such a great job. So Don, at the next meeting when we do our report, could you also talk about the SAO's office and why it's just a little bit different this year? I just want to make sure that that's publicly addressed as well, rather than, you know, having, you know, any suppositions, but I'd rather have the public and the commissioners know specifically why there's going to be a 3-year review and why it's going to wait until fourth quarter.
No, I can do that, of course.
Awesome. Okay, so looks like we're at the end of our meeting and we're at commissioner comments. Commissioner Marzano, do you have any comments?
No, just wish everybody a good day.
Yes. And same for me. And again, thank you to our team and also Moss Adams and for all the work that you're doing to make sure that we're doing our best job with a fiduciary responsibility. Really appreciate that. And nobody does it better than the Port of Tacoma. So go team. So with no further business before the committee, we will adjourn. The time is now 10:33 a.m. Thank you all.